All right, you're on the Arms Room with Glenn.
And John.
And Mason, how you doing, buddy?
I am back.
You are back.
People.
After, it been a month?
Boy. Our listener base can go back up again because I'm here
thank
again.
Thank goodness you're back. Now people will finally start listening to our show again. Our listener rate dropped by one, maybe even two, while Mason
was
gone.
Wow, that's amazing.
But Adam was here, and he did a good job. He didn't mess up the board at all. It was great.
Well, what's life without some mistakes, Glenn?
How was AT, buddy?
It was a shit show.
Are you happy that the taxpayers got to pay for your journey?
It was a waste of taxpayer money. Actually, we needed more taxpayer money because our unit didn't even have enough food to feed us for the whole time we were there. We literally had to steal food from other units.
That was the seer element of your AT,
yeah,
buddy.
Yep.
We're out of food, boys.
We literally had to like sneak in the chow lines for other units and sign with fake names and serial numbers to get food. Yeah, it was great. That's your taxpayer money at work, people.
Life in the reserves. Did you learn any valuable lessons?
Not that I can say on the air.
Oh, like that? So like double bag before you tag kind of stuff?
There
like,
you go.
Those are the lessons you guys learned?
Yep.
All right.
Always double garbage bag it. No one brought prophylactics. Those weren't in the budget either. So got to make do with what you can.
It sounds like your medic failed you. Medics always have condoms.
Yeah.
They lied to you. They were using them all on
poor
each other.
Unit, man.
Because medics are gay.
I always enjoy when Mason has some kind of long training and the texts he sends me are invaluable.
I feel for him sometimes when he's gone because like when my unit does stuff, even if it's really crappy, we always have fun.
And food.
And food. We always have food.
Poor Mason. Oh.
And energy drinks. Like literally the middle of the desert at NTC, we were all still drinking Monsters and Rockstars. And all these other guys are walking around sucking at life, drinking shitty chow hall coffee. And they're like, hey, what'd you guys get? None of your business. You have nothing to offer us.
Yeah. Trade value.
Nope.
What you got?
Sexual favors.
What you need?
I take
what
my wife
have.
With me when I go to these things. I don't need your sexual favors.
I had to keep my soldiers fed somehow, John. So did some dirty shit while I was there.
The sacrifices you make for your men, Mason. That's why you look so sad today.
With other men. His face reminds me of a meme I saw on Instagram last night. It was one of the Bert and Ernie ones.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that one. I thought you tagged me in that. It was funny.
Like. Bert wishes Ernie would stop trying to pray away the gay after they make love.
Oh, any news? Any news, Mason? Any great things going on in the world?
No, Glenn, I was.
But you're sitting in front of a goddamn computer.
I had no communication.
Whoa, watch the language, guy.
Leave him out of this, Glenn.
God don't need a
damn.
He can walk on water.
He doesn't need the news.
Anything? The Las Vegas police shooting.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
That was particularly interesting. We posted that up on the Independence Training Facebook page, so mm-hmm. No idea what the hell I'm talking about. Go check it out. It's a great video.
Listen to the audio. The audio is kind of amusing.
It is kind of amusing, but the video is good because it shows high-intensity engagements. I mean, from the time those two officers left their vehicle to the time they were exchanging gunfire was seconds. I mean, 1 or 2 seconds. It was fast.
Yeah.
A lot of rounds down range really quickly at one guy with a gun. But then he drops his gun. They move in on, they secure him, and he is bleeding
profusely.
He's bleeding so heavily from a femoral hit that as the officer's standing in the blood is literally rippling in waves against his foot. The blood mm-hmm. is pouring. I'm not even exaggerating. You have to watch the video. The blood is literally rippling out and whacking his shoe. It's in a huge pool of blood. But anyway, he pulls out a cat tourniquet and saves the dude's life.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty legit. Interesting things is he carried the cat strapped around his ankle, which is a pretty decent place to keep it.
That was kind of an interesting carrying position for sure.
It's interesting to look at too because as he applies the cat tourniquet, not once but twice, he puts it on inside out so the windlass is against the body and he's going, shit, you know, and then he pulls it off and then he does it again. Shit, he pulls it off and then his partner's like, whoa, calm down, buddy.
He's like, whoa, buddy.
We'll get this.
Relax.
One big thing that he did that I definitely would make a note of is the dude did not wear gloves. Man, if I'm putting hands, and of course, they're covered in blood. He's covered in blood.
Yeah.
And I'm like, man, if I'm dealing with someone I don't know, especially some criminal suspect, gloves. Gloves, man. So, but if you haven't seen the video, it's a really, really good video. You can look it up online, Las Vegas Metro PD, you know, shooting or whatever, or get on my my Independence Training Facebook page and check that out. I can't think of any other great news, man.
There
We've
was
got
another police shooting.
Where at?
Wasn't it? I don't know. But that guy Ed's manifesto or whatever.
Yeah.
He posted it up. I think it was in the South somewhere. But they were like chasing a guy, a suspect down in a car. And then he stopped and was this larger African-American dude gets out and starts shooting at the police. Mm. So, of course, they get out and engage him. And even when this guy is on the ground, he's still shooting at them. So they just keep filming his body full of rounds. And you will see his body like move and everything as each round hits him. And they don't stop until he stops.
Which is actually, that's another good lesson to take away. Just because someone goes down doesn't mean they're out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, someone can be down for any number of reasons. They might have chose to go down. They could be playing possum. You can shoot their legs out from underneath them or whatever. Just because someone's mobility system's gone doesn't mean their operational system's gone. So track your target, man. Track your target with your sights. Always. Competitive or combative, right? Let's see.
The transgender thing.
Oh, gives a shit.
No, it's. I just think this is funny because so we had to take transgender awareness training at AT. So we all sit around and the commander reads this thing off for an hour, right? 2 days later, Trump repeals it. And we're like,
POTUS says no.
Great. I'm super glad that we wasted. They made us get up at 5 a.m. to take this training that we no longer need for anything.
Yep.
Yeah. Which it's always interesting the double standards liberals have, right? Because they're like, oh, you know, president, do you realize that you just, you know, these people, you know, the average transgender between the age of whatever and whatever attempts suicide and blah, and you just barred them from military service. You're like, I don't want those people in the military. If they're already thinking about committing suicide, they're already mentally unstable. Yeah, I don't think those are people we need serving in the military. No,
probably shouldn't put them around firearms.
Mentally unstable people. No, thanks.
Bad op.
What else? We did, as usual, lots of great training over the last week. A lot of medical training this last week, which is always a good time. And useful skill sets. We talked about that ad nauseum on the show. Anything else we got coming up? What else we got coming up? We got all kinds of stuff coming up, dude.
We're moving out of summer into fall.
Yeah. So as usual, all
the schedule is full.
Everybody wants to train now.
Yeah. Now that it's not inconveniently hot. Well, it's still pretty damn hot. Oh, I know. I got something cool to tell you. I went out and started my predator hunting season. Yes.
Okay.
It is upon us. I love predator hunting, man.
I'm glad.
Dumped a triple coyote, one stand, first stand in the morning. Love it. You're just sad because you don't kill anything.
I want to go.
Yeah, you got to kill more stuff.
What is the hunting license for us, like $5 or something?
No. For kids, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, cool. The kids' license, $5.
For adults, it's combo hunting fish is like 57. I think hunting alone is like 34 or something.
I think I have to buy a new one. I think mine expired.
But yeah, use license for use $5.
I thought there was a military discount too.
There might be. Yeah, actually, I think there is. Active duty gets a discount. I don't know what it is. So, I don't know. But, yeah, it's good stuff, man. I love predator hunting. It's fast-paced. It's a good time. Good time. Looking forward to more of it. Going out again tomorrow because fox and bobcat season opens tomorrow. So
When's beaver season, Glenn? When are we going beaver hunting?
Beaver hunting's year-round, buddy.
Perfect.
Yeah. Hunt beavers year-round. At night.
365.
During the day. They're mostly nocturnal, so it's best to hit them at night.
Are we still talking about the animal beavers?
Are we?
I'm totally confused.
Were we ever talking about the animal beavers?
I was.
Well, they are somewhat animals. You know, they're all different.
And nocturnal.
Yeah. Dracar Noir is a scent they like, I hear. The beavers that are in your...
Oh, okay.
I thought they were all about Old Spice.
Or Old Spice.
Or yeah, Brute.
It's an attractant.
Brute by Fabergé.
Oh, wow. That's right in Mason's wheelhouse, too.
Yeah, buddy.
So it's perfect, man. Yeah. Remember, cheap drinks.
Got to test your skill set.
Yeah.
You got to get out there bottom and constantly shelf drinks. Test your skill set.
Bottom shelf drinks.
Oh, remember, if they're in a pack, if they pack together, make sure you go and you don't hit on the best looking
beaver. Try to shoot the ugliest one first.
Yeah, get the ugliest one first.
If your vodka,
fat one first.
If your vodka doesn't come out of a large plastic bottle, you're wrong.
That's right. If it costs more than $10.99 for a whole bottle. Redwire gear moment. You ready, John?
Word.
Go.
So for some reason, this popped into my head this morning. Talk about the EDC, the everyday carry thing.
Because
I see constant posts and people talking about, oh, this is my summer gun, or this is my when I wear a t-shirt gun, or this is my when I wear slacks gun.
Right.
Like, look, pick a gun. Pick a setup.
Not a fashion accessory, man.
Yeah, be consistent with your stuff. It doesn't just consist of your gun.
Yeah.
Your knife, your wallet, med kit if you carry one, your cell phone, your keys.
The way chapstick. You dress appropriate to conditions.
Yeah. You know, I have one setup. That's it. And the only change that's ever made to that is if I go somewhere where I can't carry a gun, I strap on an extra med kit. That's it. It's the only change I make. Everything else stays exactly the same. So be consistent in your EDC, and it also applies to more than what's on your person. It also applies to things that you keep in your vehicle.
Yeah. Consistency.
Yep.
All right. Redwire Gear Moment brought to you by redwiregear.com. Check them out.
Woo.
So today's topic, we have a guest, Josh, man of many words as always. How you doing, Josh?
Good. How you guys doing?
Josh is one of our instructors over at Independence Training. So any of you guys who've trained with us, you know who he is probably.
Is this the first time Josh has ever been on the show with us?
He was at the Taser show with us when Mason got tased.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Only to watch me get tased.
Yeah, he actually literally came. I told him Mason was going to get tased. Even though Mason hadn't agreed to it yet, I knew that I was going to be able to convince him to do it.
Right. So, well, we knew that weeks in advance.
Weeks in advance. So I told Josh, hey, man, there's like a 95% chance that Mason's getting tased.
He told me Mason's getting tased again today. So
yeah. See, he's back. Yeah, you're in a corner, Mason. No escape, buddy. Three of us, one of you. You're looking sad anyway. I'll cheer you up.
I'll just lay down and take it at this point.
Just like your Army service.
Yeah, I've been conditioned by this AT to just lay down and take it. I brought my own lube and everything. So.
Oh, yeah, God. I pre-lubed before you came in. Awesome. Always. All right, so we're going to be talking today about competition skills and combative skills and whether or not they translate. It's an interesting topic. And I brought Josh in to talk about this because out of all our instructors, right, we all have experience in one or the other. Some of us have a mix of both. But I think out of everybody, Josh probably has the best mix of both and is very consistently in both. And so we hear a lot of people talk about competition and combative skills from a standpoint of like we'll see comments online that'll say things like or veterans that I'm talking to.
I would
to.
Never do that in real life.
Yeah. Those skills, that's just a game. Or, there are no rules in a fight. So, you know, competition has too many rules. There's no rules in a real fight. Those skills don't apply. Oh, it's not the same. All that kind of stuff. And so this topic has got requested by a lot of listeners for this calendar period. So I thought it would be interesting to diversify what we had. Yeah. So what do you think, Josh, as far as looking at it from both sides of the house, what do you think – as far as are competitive skills useful in combative situations? Are combative skills useful in competition situations?
I'd say absolutely. I mean, you look at some of the top tier units in the military, and they go out of their way to train with the top level competitive shooters. I mean, there's a reason you guys pay to get that high end training. These guys have something to teach.
And from that kind of perspective, looking at it, you got guys like all the way back, old school guys like Todd Jarrett, who was contracted to a number of different top tier units. Now, you know, Robbie Latham, Michilek, all those guys have all been, and a lot of other high level competitors have all been taken into special operations units. But now you flip that and look at a lot of special operations guys who either while in service or once exiting service now shoot competition. What do you think that relationship is? Why do they do that?
I mean, well, once you leave, you spend your whole life training and preparing for combat and shooting and being tactical and all that, and then you leave, you don't have anything to do anymore. You know, you get to the top of your game, and then what? There's no place to go with it. So jump into competition, learn a new skill set.
Sit in a bar and drink the rest of your life away and tell war stories. That's kind of where people go.
Or you can be a has-been, right?
Yeah.
You can be a guy who just relies on what he did back in the day and says, hey, that's the best I'll ever be, and that's the end of the story.
Which is kind of something from a training perspective. Like, it's one thing that for our instructor team I think makes us unique from other organizations is that our instructors are always trying to stay kind of on that razor's edge. We're always trying to push ourselves and not leaning on whatever it is we used to do or a long time ago or back in the day or any of that kind of stuff, because – we know that one, it's a perishable skill set, and two, like you said, you get to the top of your game, what do you do now? You know, and I think that there's a big misconception about military training, and I'm talking from, you know, a regular Army unit. You're talking from a little bit different than a regular Army unit, but even then, do you think that the skill sets you learned in the military were applicable to competition? Did it make you a better competitive shooter?
Oh, absolutely.
How do you think it made you better?
Well, just like when you first address a stage, you got this big game plan of how you're going to shoot this stage, and you dive into it, and about 3 seconds into that stage, it all goes to shit. Mm.
Every time.
I have the best plan in the world when I start a stage. About 3 seconds in, it all falls apart, and then you just go back to what you know to get through the stage.
And that's just like a mission plan.
Like a mission plan. Just frego that shit and go.
Yeah, you're like, oh, perfect. It's going exactly like any mission of going according to plan is about to result in ambush or something, right? Like if everything's going according to plan, shit terrible is about to happen next. So how about competitive to combative? I mean, looking at it now from – and now let's actually step back for a second. You shot competition before you even went in the military, right?
Correct.
So as a young man, you shot in various competitive sports. Do you feel that – having shot in competitive sports and you grew up hunting, do you feel that those, which I kind of consider hunting a type of competition, you know, it is a competition, right? It's not quite a combative situation because
Man versus beast.
Typically the other animal or we are animals, right? The other animal's not going to try to shoot back, but I do consider it a competition because, you know, against a clock in, you know, less than optimal conditions on less than optimal targets.
Yeah, but you're also trying to outsmart something whose entire purpose is to survive. That is absolutely a competition.
So it's a great competition, right? So looking at it from those perspectives, do you think that being a good hunter and being a competitive shooter, did that flow over into military service? Did it help you out?
Yeah. I mean, the military is, hate to say it, pretty lacking when it comes to marksmanship training. I mean, unless you go to AMU or, you know, the Marine Corps sniper program, something like that, the training's pretty shit. You get like couple weeks of marksmanship training and that's it. You know, you come from a competitive shooting background, you've already honed a lot of those skills, so when you come in you get picked up. Like I got picked up into the sniper platoon because they knew I could shoot.
So it's actually even beneficial for those of you who are listening who may be interested in getting into the service, or maybe you're in the service and you're trying to figure out where you want to go next, or you're trying to maybe make a diversion to go into different units or something, kind of getting involved in things like competition, getting involved in things like hunting could actually be beneficial.
Yeah, definitely.
So how did you, to kind of go back on that for a second, because originally when you went in, you know, you didn't go into the sniper program, how did you get picked up? I mean, how did a unit find out that you were capable of doing this?
I mean, you're on the range with people, you notice things, you see trends, you know? I'm at the top of the game on the marksmanship side. People take notice.
So again, for you who, you know, for those of you guys who are still in service or looking to go in or whatever, that's it's not showing off. It's just demonstrating your capabilities, man.
Just doing what you're good at.
If you're doing the best you can at the, you know, during marksmanship quals or range days or whatever, and I think that's a that's a huge thing that sometimes people overlook, is they don't necessarily want to always demonstrate their skills, but it's an important thing to be able to do if you want to move up, you know. So back to the other competitive combative thing. So then, you know, you spent a good chunk of your adult life there doing combative type shooting. Did you ever do any competitive shooting during that time, or was it all?
Yeah, we shot. That was one good thing about the unit I was with. I mean, we did do competitive shooting as well. I shot in the SODIC sniper competition while I was in the unit, or in 2nd Ranger Battalion still. And it was great. I mean, it was really good, you know, working with your partner. It's just something, you guys come off a deployment together, you guys are clicking hot, you go get tested against people in the competitive world.
How did you find that you guys typically did it? Maybe not even your team, you and your spotter specifically, but how did you find that military guys did in those competitive environments that they might not have been as used to? Did they still do pretty well? Were they top? Were they middle? Kind of where they end up usually?
Yeah, we came out real good. I think the team that won it was an SF group that just came back off a long deployment. So they'd been together, working together for a long time. So they had that real good team cohesion going. They ended up winning it. My team ended up taking 3rd in it. So, I mean, the military guys came out real strong in that match.
And from a competitive or from a combative skill set to be beneficial in competition, you already mentioned one thing, which is like, you know, team cohesion. And that's something, you know, you and I as long-range shooting partners in different competitions that we've been in, that's always something that we watch other teams and we look at, like, how are they communicating? What's making them more efficient? What's making them better? How can we incorporate that into us? And certainly you see teams that don't communicate well and they're screwed.
Oh,
so
yeah, terrible.
So unit cohesion or team cohesion is good. What are some other things that you think made you guys more competitive? Even though you were pulling, we'll say, from combative skills, what still made you more competitive because you had those skill sets? Like, what skills did you have that were like, this is going to make us a better competitor?
You got a really good understanding of your equipment and stuff like that. You know, most people who competition, and if they're not at the top of the game or they just show up for that one match every month or something like that, they shoot their gear and they throw it in the corner, and next month they pull it out and take it back out and go with it again. You know, if you're in the military and that's your full-time profession, you stay current with your gear. You know your gear extremely well. You know where all your stuff's at. You know your dope off your rifle.
How about endurance and physical fitness? Did that ever come into a play? I mean, obviously in the kinds of environments you were in, most of your guys were pretty in pretty good shape, and they were physically good from cardio and strength and all that. Did you see where that was a big advantage?
Oh yeah. I mean, that depends on the match. You know, sure. You got some more of these endurance driven competitions. Your military males are just going to, you know, that's a feather to their hat. You know, these guys perfected the art of staying in shape and being combat ready and combat focused. You take that into a competition where your endurance is going to be tested, yeah, they're going to do a lot better under stress.
So for someone looking to prepare for certain types of matches, they definitely need to look at what kind of stages are going to be present.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And I think that that's something where, you know, you and I have shot a lot of competitions together, and a lot of stuff we do is action-based and endurance-based and stuff. And usually where we can do really well, even if we're not on our perfect shooting game that day, or even sometimes, you know, for maybe just a stage or two, it's the physical fitness thing that helps drive – the rest of the machine. Like you can balance that kind of, you know, I'm doing okay shooting, but I'm doing really well getting through the stages or getting through the obstacles or hiking these long distances. And
yeah, or just look at like the end of a long day of competition. You know, look at these 3-day matches. You get into that second day, a lot of these older guys are starting to get wore down and beat down already, you know, and their performance is starting to fall off. You know, if you're in decent shape, or you know, you got your cardio up, you got your endurance up, you can really pick up some extra points on that day two, day three.
That's actually a really good point to make. I remember one of the recent matches we shot here, which was a 2-day match, and it was a Superstition Mystery Mountain. And at the end of the day, like, a lot of the other guys in our squad were like, "Man, I'm so run down." And I was like, I was just peaking up, man. Like, I was just like, how many more stages are we gonna do? You know? And they were like, "Oh, we can't do any more." Like, we were hard as hell, if you remember. We had an opportunity at the end of day one to do another stage. And I was like, you and I both were like, "Let's do this stage." And the other guy's like, "There's no way this stage is going to smoke us." I'm like, "No, let's do it. We're warmed up and we're ready. Otherwise, we got to come back tomorrow morning when we're cold and do this. Right now, we are peaked."
But see,
but the other guys weren't peaked. They were
whipped.
They were absolutely.
But that's another benefit to combative training, and however you want to look at it, specifically in the shooting world, is you take that military base. And our whole job and profession revolves around being ready regardless. Mm-hmm. Like, whether it's the end of the day, whether it's the beginning of the day, we have to be on our game all the time, consistently, or when we screw up, people die.
Right.
Period. Like, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. So that's one of the other things. It's like, I don't shoot a lot of competition. I shoot the Wednesday night steel matches. I usually shoot a couple of action matches throughout the year. And I go into them completely cold, like completely cold. I don't do any warm up. I don't pregame my stages. I look at the stage. I'm like, okay, there's the stage brief. All right, I have to do this, this, and this. All right, let's go. And I do the very best I can throughout the entire thing. I don't get super discouraged unless my shooting is really crappy. And then I'm just like, ah. But then I'm usually able to bounce back from that on the next stage. Mm. You know, that's one of the things, is that mental resilience and that physical resilience, I think, that translates very well from the combatives world to the competition world, or vice versa.
Now, to look at those other kind of combative skills, I mean, we're looking at balance of speed and accuracy always, right? And that's always something that the competitive guys or combative guys, I mean, say like, "Oh, I don't go shoot competition because there's all these things that don't apply." But is it ever, looking at it from both sides of the house like you can, is there ever a time that you can think of where being fast and accurate was a negative?
Talking about beaver hunting still? No, I mean, that's the goal. That's the end state of being the best in your game, is fast and accurate.
Now, other competitive things that I've heard a lot is people will say, and I think we'll just kind of take these one at a time, just give me your input on them, but guys will talk about like, "Well, there's no rules in a fight." but there's too many rules in a competition. I mean, having been in a number of different situations, do you agree with that or disagree with that?
I mean, that's retarded.
Yeah.
we'll just go with retarded.
Yeah. Because there are rules in a fight.
Yeah, there's rules in a fight. I mean, there's definitely rules in a fight.
Yeah.
And you're saying, so basically, looking at it from that way, you're saying basically the United States military picked up all the guys in the backwoods, flew them to Afghanistan, threw them out, and told them good luck.
Right.
No rules.
Right. Well, I've met a few that is, in fact, what happened.
So that's the military training at its best. You know, right. Find a bunch of boys who wanted to go put the hurt on some people, so we just went and dropped them off.
Yeah.
No, there's rules. No one's ever ran through a house. There was no rules involved. I mean, anytime you clear a house, there's tons of rules you have to obey by.
There's too many rules. I think there's more rules almost in the military than there are in the civilian world.
And there's rules of engagement.
Oh, yeah. Rules of engagement, of course.
There's safety rules. Yeah. There's all kinds of stuff.
So, yeah, there's no getting out of that one.
Rules and talking into comms. I mean, shit, there's nothing you do in the military that there's not some kind of preset field directive for, you know?
And there's a learning curve there. Yeah. Now, don't get it wrong. I definitely got my ass chewed by many a RO when I first started shooting competition, because everything I've always done has always been on the tactical side. So.
Sure. Now, what are some of those initial lessons that you had to learn from going from a tactical environment to a competitive environment?
The competitive environment, I won't use the word over safe, but they really play to the side of safety.
Mm.
You know, you work long enough with a group of guys, you start developing that level of trust in people because you know their ability and they know that the training that you've been through with them. You know, you don't get that at a competition. You can't say that everybody's going to be on the same level. You're going to get that first-time shooter who does no business doing what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you might be able to do it safely, but they're not.
Mm-hmm.
They have to play to that level. That's just something. So you have to play to that level. And if you're saying that you can't downturn it enough to play to that level, then you ain't at the top of your game.
Yeah. I think that's a great way to say it, too. Like, because I hear people say, like, oh, I can't adapt. You know, I'm too hardwired. I'm too programmed to be a killer. You know, and it's like, wait a minute. You're telling me you can't.
Poor shit.
You can't modify whatever you're doing. Like, muzzle direction's one that comes up a lot, right? Yeah. Like the 180 rule.
Well, that's like saying there's only one way to change mech.
Right.
You can't do it that one way. I ain't ever going to do it.
Right.
No, you can change mechs hundreds of different ways.
Right.
You know?
So there's that idea of following safety rules. I see a lot of tactical guys who have a problem. You know, they break the 180 because let's say they go to move backwards. And so they'll turn. Muzzle depressed, they'll be safe. But they'll turn to, you know, move backwards like we would in a tactical environment. And then they get a DQ. You know, they get disqualified for breaking the 180. And then when you talk to them about it, they're like, well, I'm just used to a tactical environment. Like, look, even in a tactical environment –
You don't make
a
habit of sweeping everybody.
Yeah, you still have to be aware of your muzzle direction.
Yeah.
And a depressed muzzle isn't always the right answer
in
a tactical environment. You know, depending on the situation, depends on where your muzzle is going to be pointed. You got to pay attention to that. Still got to follow that rule, right? Even in combat, there's rules. So you still have to follow that rule. What are some other things that you think you had to overcome moving from a tactical to a competitive environment that were just things that you had to modify a little bit? I mean, safety, learning that the people aren't playing to the highest level. The match directors and the match is typically playing to the lowest level, and they have to because they're not pre-screening everybody coming in.
Yeah.
So what are some other things that you found, you know, moving into that competitive environment that were things that you might have had to change or alter a little bit?
Well, you change things for speed. Like the way I draw a pistol. I don't draw into retention and press out on when I shoot competition. It's slower.
Mm.
And if you point shoot at a match, yeah, you're out.
Right.
I'll just put that out there right now.
Yeah.
Know? I know you can point shoot and, you know, shoot from retention in combat. That's fine. You know, that's a great skill to have. But yeah, try that at a match and kiss it goodnight. You're done. You're DQ'd. So, you know, you change things up like that. You change things for speed. Where can I pick up a quarter second here? You know, it's not what I do tactically, but it's what I do in competition because it gives me that half quarter second edge.
Now, how about equipment modifications? Have you modified equipment?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, but you've modified stuff on both sides of the house.
Yeah.
I know you guys tuned your rifles out to the best, to what you were allowed to tune your guns out and your optics and stuff. So, you know.
So no matter what, you're going to modify your equipment so it fits the conditions best.
I mean, you're always going to set your gear up to how it best affect you, best help you, you know.
And that's from either side.
That will never change.
Yeah, from either a tactical side or a competition side, you're always looking at your equipment and saying, how can I modify this thing to make me faster, to make it lighter, to make it more accurate, to whatever the situation is that you need to do, right? To have a more rapid pace of fire, to be able to attach a thermal sight, whatever it is, how do I modify my stuff so I can make it mission applicable? So let's think about some skills that that you build in competition that would be beneficial in a tactical environment. What do you think, looking back on your skill sets as a tactical shooter and now looking at your skill sets as a competitive shooter, and you shoot a lot of competition. I mean, that bears noting. And you shoot a lot of different types of competition, which also bears noting.
Got a little carried away
this
last year.
Yeah, so like I remember a year and a half ago or whatever, we're out of state training and we're driving across the state to another location. We're like, we're going to really start getting into competition pretty heavily, but we're going to keep everything pretty low key and be pretty cool.
I just don't know if I have enough time.
Yeah, we're just not sure, but now we're just involved in it. But looking at even that time frame that you've been doing it, I mean, you shoot at least once a week, sometimes more than that, in a competition, and you are pistol comps, you're shooting three gun, you're shooting two gun, you're shooting long range. We've shot shotgun competitions together.
Gun. I mean, you know, if you have a match and we have access to a gun, we're going to shoot it.
Yeah.
And that's great. That's what's great about it. I mean, just, I was shot a silhouette match the other day. That's just, holy crap. Yeah. That is an awakening.
Yeah.
You want to feel bad about how good you are? Go shoot silhouette. That is tough.
Well, and now thanks to the National Rifle League's new 22 division, I'm looking at our buddy Nico's rifle, and I'm just like, God damn it, now I got to build a really expensive 22. I know you've been thinking it, too.
I got one being built right now. Mine's up at LRK being built.
Oh, my God.
So we're already looking at that going out. I was talking to Nico this weekend about he did a whole big testing on like 20 different rounds. I'm already talking to him, like, which one do you find that perform the best? Like, give me three or four that you, so I can order a bunch of those, try them out, which one's going to be accurate. Because, 22, now you're testing a whole new set of skills. You know, now it's this small rim fire. How much accuracy is going to squeeze out of this thing that's typically not very accurate, you know? How much actually can I squeeze out? It's a great low cost way to get in, because even a totally tricked out 22, you know, you're still typically sub $1,000. You can't really trick out a normal precision rifle for less than that.
$300, you can get into the 22 game.
Oh yeah,
and be competitive.
Oh yeah, and then your ammo, even match grade 22 with air quotes there, match grade 22 is still 20 cents a shot, you know what I mean? It's still, I mean, we were out there slinging.
9 mil pricing.
Well,
the best thing about 22 is you can actually shoot it and shoot it a lot to build those fundamentals. And that's the key to beating anybody at anything. It's just, I don't care if you have a $15,000 rifle. If you don't know how to shoot it, it's worthless.
Mm-hmm. So competitive skills that can translate into the tactical environment, right? Like you've done enough of the tactical shooting and enough of the competitive shooting now, I think, to make a pretty fair, assessment here. What are some competitive skills that you have now that maybe you wish you would have had back in the good old tactical days?
Just the repetitions. I mean, you get to shoot a lot more rounds. You get to see a lot of different problems. You know, you get to see them live. Then what? And you get a lot of – there's some really creative match directors out there who – give you some no shit problems to figure out and to shoot at. And I mean, that's great. I mean, how often do you get to shoot off a roof backwards or, you know, just doing some random crazy shit that you don't normally get on the competitive side, but it's great to see it once, you know, that way, if you ever dealt with it on a no shit scenario, you're like, hey, I remember this. Mm. I've been in this situation before and it's that much easier.
I think for me, it's the positional shooting, especially when we're doing long range stuff. Definitely with the action matches as well, but they're usually pretty close. So halfway decent position, we're only shooting 300 or 400 yards. Yeah. Isn't that big of a deal. But when we start stretching out to, you know, 800+, 1,000+, and you have to shoot from some crazy position behind a barricade or off of a, you know, car or stagecoach, like that one match you shot in, there's all kinds of crazy stuff you have to do. And so – I think the exposure to that, so let's say I'm a law enforcement sniper, you know, and my typical engagement's, you know, 100 yards or so, but obviously we're going to train beyond mm-hmm. that. And I go and I start shooting competitions. And even if I'm not using my quote unquote duty rifle, and then I find myself in this crazy barricaded suspect position where I've got to prop off of a fence. Well, maybe in our traditional law enforcement training, we never prop off of fences. But in the last four or five competitions I've shot, we propped off of fences a couple times.
Yeah.
You know, now I'm going to understand better how to get into a more stable position. I'm going to be able to see other people who are better than me get into more stable positions. I mean, I learn a lot from competition just watching other people.
Yeah, that's the best thing you can do is just go and then watch people shoot. And especially down here in the Southwest, we have some phenomenal shooters down here. And you can pick up a lot.
And tons of matches.
Oh, tons of matches. You can shoot a match every weekend.
You can shoot a match almost every day of the week.
Yeah. Here in the Valley specifically, you can literally shoot something daily, some type of competition. Indoor, outdoor, silhouettes, pistol steel, two gun. Like there's something going on almost 7 days a week out here.
So how about from like the mission planning side of the house, right? Like when you look at a stage, you have to look at it and say, all right, I'm going to do this, then I'm going to do this, and in this section I'm going to do this, and in this section I'm going to do this. And I hear a lot of guys I talk to, mostly vets, who are just like, that's stupid. That's stupid to be able to go in there and look at a stage because that ain't real life. That ain't combat. Now look at that from a mission planning perspective, right? Yeah. From a mission planning perspective, even as you said, most plans go to shit pretty quick. But at least you have a general idea of what you've got to accomplish. You know, we've got to move through this area and accomplish this task. If we get engaged here, here's our fallback position, or here's where we can move to. Here's where our air support's going to come from, or here's our QRF over here, whatever, right? You still have to know where all the moving pieces are located, basically. And that's essentially how it is in a competition. So do you think that being able to plan out a stage better, if you're, you know, for listeners that are like, still currently tactical guys and considering getting in a competition, or maybe they're doing a little bit and they're trying to figure out how it's beneficial. Do you think that stage planning, again, looking at it now, do you think that that would help with someone being able to look at a mission briefing and figure it out better since it's something that they're regularly doing in competition?
Yeah, well, it's the same thing as setting up your own SOPs. You know, you set your SOPs like, hey, this is how we clear a center-fed room, right? This is how we approach a double spinner or a pistol spinner or a Texas Star. You know, you build these SOPs to that. So that way when you see it, you're like, this is how we approach it. Mm. There's no difference to it.
So it gets you used to setting your standard operating procedures on how I'm going to handle this particular situation.
Exactly. And then when you start running through the lanes, I mean, you shoot competition long enough, you're going to see duplicate stages. Mm. I mean, we've only been doing this for a short amount of time in the give and take of it all. And I've already starting to see stages that repeat. You know, you remember, hey, I tried this on that stage last time. It didn't work. I'm going to try it this way. You know, you get someone who's been shooting for 13 years. They've seen these stages quite a few times. So they have a real set standard way to do this. Like, take that to the tactical side. Units trained have a set standard way to do things.
Now, how about accuracy? Do you think that, because that's another point that always gets beat up on competition, like, you know, most of the time we're shooting at cardboard targets or whatever, it's two anywhere or one in the A zone or something like that. And with the exception of that low hit percentage target where they'll put a little hostage target above, you know, the shoulder, or you got to bust a clay pigeon hanging, you know, somewhere. You have to make a low percentage shot where you have to be really specific. Most of the time, it's two hits anywhere or a hit on steel. And most of the targets are pretty damn big. So it's not very hard. So, you know, we're blazing through. I mean, I remember the one stage that we did in the Hard as Hell 2 gun, there's actually Brian got a photo of me doing, I'm not even looking down my sights because I run a low power variable on my rifle. My rifle's turned sideways and I'm point shooting everything. I point shot the whole damn stage. And we were running, you had to run through that little draw and you were shooting all these close in targets and then you had to go up in the tower and then all of a sudden sights matter because I think 300 meter engagements up there or something. So sometimes in situations like that, I feel like, all right, this is great because it's teaching me how to be fast, but like I'm not even really using my sights. I'm using the reference of the gun where it is because most of those shots, man, they were inside of 7 yards. You know, it's not very hard to put two anywhere. Do you think that kind of concept makes it makes you less likely to be accurate in a tactical or combative situation? In other words, do you think that competition builds bad accuracy habits?
I think you can make it build whatever you want. I mean, you train to a standard. If you're going to go shoot matches and you want to push the accuracy factor, push the accuracy factor. You know, you get a chance to walk the stages after you shoot them and see where your hits were. If you had a couple fly out into the B zone and you wanted all A's, you know, slow it down. If you're going to win, then yeah, who gives a shit? You get your two in the target, you're good to go.
Mm. Yeah, but if you think about, from my limited perspective of training and combative experience, you think about breaching a room, right? There's going to be times when you've gone through that door and there's a dude like right there. Your sights weren't lined up. You put two on him somewhere, right? Like it happens. You come through this door, right? This is, like I said, my opinion. You come through this door and you're like, okay, we know there's probably five or six guys in this room or in this building, right? There's probably a couple out here because we have all of this planning and briefing, and we built this mock-up, and we know about what the inside of this building looks like to speak to the stage planning thing where, mm-hmm. like, I've worked with a few special operations guys, and, like, to see their mission planning and stuff far beyond what your average grunt gets. Your average grunt's like, all right, we're going to go here, we're going to go into this compound, and that's it. That's all the info you get.
There's and that's three buildings. Even higher than where yeah. I'm at. Our average mission planning is, hey, guys, we have a mission in 5 minutes.
Yeah. That's what I get, but I have a different job. But, I mean, there's been – and I've talked to guys in the past that were special operations guys and worked with special operations guys, and they're like, yeah, they're like, we hit this house, crashed through this door, and there was this dude that – he was, like, literally right there, just the other side of the freaking door. I went to bring my gun up. I know my sights weren't lined up, and I still put two rounds on him, and I kept moving because that's what I had to do. Like, you get into those situations where it happens.
Now you're kind of talking like shooting out of retention.
Yeah, you're shooting from that retention, or like Glenn was saying, you're going through this trench and you're point shooting essentially, but it happens combatively as well as competitively. And as long as you've trained to a certain standard, as you were talking about, you're going to get those hits because you know, okay, at this range, I don't need perfect sight alignment. You know, at this range, I can get my gun up, get it aligned with the center of my body.
Yeah, you're talking thousands upon thousands.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you don't want someone saying that you can do this by right. just...
No, I'm not saying this happens.
Point shooting.
I mean, this doesn't happen overnight. This is someone that's spent time behind their gun.
Huge cost for failure if you miss.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
That's definitely something that has absolutely. To be
addressed. So that's something to look at, and that's kind of why I brought it up because, you know, certainly in our training classes, right, we shoot until we're done. Until whatever happens, right?
Right.
We get the results that we want. Person stops, person drops, person puts down the weapon, person fucking dies, whatever, right? Like we've accomplished the task that we've wanted to accomplish, right? Whether mm-hmm. that's a military standpoint, a self-defense standpoint, law enforcement standpoint, whatever, the person has done what we needed them to do, and that's when we stop shooting it, however many rounds that takes. Then we step into the competitive world, and it's like, all right, just two on target. I mean, I know I've certainly been known to put more than two on target. Why do I put more than two on target? Because I wasn't sure about the other ones.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where, for me anyway, it's not a huge accuracy loss because, one, I do go for accuracy, and it's more important for me to get accurate hits than it is for me to just get time, though I have to find a balance there, right?
Right.
We shoot with – or used to shoot with a guy on our team quite a bit. He's like square up to every target. Tap, tap, you know, next target, tap, tap. And we're like, damn, he's so good, but he's so slow, you know, and just like, so there's, you can go too far the other direction. But to kind of speak to Josh's point on John's concept is to go back to where I'm point shooting my rifle. I spend a lot of time with my guns.
Yeah.
And I shoot them a lot under a lot of different circumstances. And so I can roll with good shoulder cheek weld.
Mm-hmm.
I can roll my gun to the side and shoot down the barrel and get good hits
and you
as
know,
many as I want.
And you know at what range you can effectively do that.
At certain distances. And I know what distance that stops working, mm-hmm. and I know within what distances it's going to
right.
work. So I think that's an important skill, though, that happens a lot in competition that might not happen in a tactical environment. You know, from your perspective, Josh, you guys got a lot of great training. You train with a lot of different great units and you cross train with different people and, you know, you get to go do a lot of cool stuff. I think for regular Army guys or regular military folks or regular law enforcement folks or law enforcement agencies that have a budget of like $10, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And those guys are certainly out
there. You have 10 training dollars per year.
Yeah. I mean, I was talking to a cop the other day that's going to do some training with us and he's like, man, I get $150 a year. That's it. They get $150 per officer a year to go seek out training. They do no inner No, and nothing other than absolutely required training for their unit or for their
like
agency.
In-house?
Yeah, so their in-house stuff is like, you know, typical stuff, like normal cop procedure stuff, yeah. You know, searches and dealing with evidence and handcuff and, you know, taser techniques and all that kind of stuff. They do normal cop shit. But if they want to go seek anything beyond that, they get $150. So it's like, how can I get the most out of that $150? Well, if you could go learn how to do some of these techniques, great. So they go take a XYZ class with some XYZ instructor. Great. Well, how are they going to apply those skills? Most people don't have access to a range. They don't have access to the kind of capability. We get spoiled, right? All of us here in this room, we get spoiled. We have access to an awesome facility. We can pretty much do whatever we want for all intents and purposes, right? We can set up any course of fire we want. If we want to practice a certain skill, we just go practice that skill, whatever. But not everyone has access to that. Even people with access to police ranges don't have access to that. Or military ranges. God, they're super restrictive. Everyone thinks military ranges are badass, like super restrictive, you know, for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And so where better to do that than competition?
Yeah, honestly, it's pretty low cost too. If you can get your unit or whoever, your agency, to sponsor your weapons, all you have to do is pick up the ammo or even sponsor the ammo. Then you're out the $10, you know, local club cost range fee. $15, you know, you go to most majors, you're anywhere from $100 to $200. Getting some of the crazy 3-day to shit, you're looking at $400, you know?
Yeah, but it's worth it.
Oh, it's definitely worth it.
It's worth it to us because we truly see and understand the benefit of it.
It's worth it to me because I don't have to set up any targets.
Well,
that's definitely worth
it. I'm always the guy who has to set up the targets, man.
But what I'm getting at is we from both sides of the house and shooting competitions and being in the industry and being involved in the entire lifestyle,
sure.
We see the benefit of that. So like for me to shoot a steel match on Wednesday night, which I've been shooting fairly regularly, with ammo and range fees, it's about, I think it's costing me about $30,
okay,
$40 a week.
Yeah. Think you're better pistol shooter now from doing this?
Yeah. I know I am.
Are you put in more extreme circumstances than you would choose to challenge yourself with?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Like I'd come a few weeks ago when you put up that freaking pistol spinner.
Hell yeah.
Well, I was God.
You just nailed it there, Glenn, with putting yourself into more situations than you'd normally do. Nobody likes
to be uncomfortable.
And I think that's where you see a lot of people who don't want to come shoot competition.
Because they're scared.
They're scared. Fuck
you. Dude,
I've
come out and shot.
They're a bad motherfucker in the military. Now you're out and you're like, hey, I was a bad motherfucker. Yeah, then you go out and get whipped by some fat dude with a fucking speed gun.
Yeah.
You're like, mother shit.
Yeah. Or you think you're shit, right? You're the best shit out there because all you ever do is shoot by yourself.
Yeah.
Well, everyone's the best when there's only up against themselves. But now when I get to go put myself up against other people, now I find out how good I really am or how this skill set is going to hold up. And it forces me, like that's part of the reason I like the matches that we typically shoot at, because they do force us to do stuff that we wouldn't otherwise normally do, that push us hard. I mean, the last match
we shot. And some stuff we fail at.
The last match we shot, the last stage that our squad had to do, there was a stage that was really, it was challenging, man. And I was pretty happy with my end results. I did really well on the stage, but it was very challenging. So basically what happened was you got a 10-round magazine for your pistol and a 10-round magazine for your rifle, and you started up at the top of this little staircase.
Which sounds terrible.
And you prop your rifle up.
Very terrible.
And your rifle was up there.
The rifle was up on top.
And ammo was still back at the thing.
You started at a table like 15 yards away.
So on the buzzer, you can only grab the 10-round mag. You had to climb up the basically like a big culvert, one of those plastic culverts that's at an angle. Yeah. So you got to climb up that thing from the inside. So it's slick on the inside. You got to climb up to the platform, get up to the platform, load your rifle. There's two targets at like 250 or something. You got to ring both of those, and then you can start engaging. Then you can run off the platform, and there's this whole other series of relatively close range targets that you have to engage with rifle. If you run out of ammo, you got to go back to the top of the platform, and you're going to run out of ammo because you can't get everything in 10 rounds. You gotta go back down the chute, grab a mag at a time, right? Grab a mag, go back up the tube, back to the platform, re-ring the distant steel.
Oh my god!
That's basically your entrance fee, we'll call it, for getting into the rest of the stage. Back into the rest of the stage, everything you can. If you run out, repeat
all over again.
Right?
Oh my god!
And then when you're done with the rifle,
you gotta do it all with pistol. Ugh.
Yeah.
That sounds terrible.
When you get up there, your entrance fee was two. two targets. Maybe they were like 20 or 25 yeah, 20 or something.
30, something like that.
And
wasn't too terrible bad, but it still sucked.
Well, that,
so that
I
was
don't
your
know,
entrance
dude,
fee. So then you run out. You got to go back down the tube, get a refresh mag, go back up, re-get into the stage by hitting the long-range targets, and you're back. And the stage,
I'm not going to lie.
The stage was just run and gun through barriers and barricades. I mean, the stage itself was tough. And then that damn tube in the beginning, it was rough. And I tell you what, I was I'm never going to set something like that up for myself. I wouldn't even thought of that. That was some devious shit, right? So, like, I wouldn't even necessarily thought of something like that. Yet we show up to the stage and it's like, well, this is what we're doing. We're here. There's no option to back off.
Yeah.
This is what we're doing.
So and that 20 or 25 yard pistol shooting, though, after at least a couple of trips for your rifle, those are getting hard.
Well, now you're back to that whole endurance deal.
Yep.
You know? Yeah. You got to build that body for it.
Oh.
And it's going to expose weaknesses that you didn't, maybe you didn't know you even had. And I think that from a competitive standpoint, you know, again, going back to competitive versus tactical, in a tactical environment, you can rely on other people to pick up the slack potentially, right? I mean, it's important
sometimes.
You do your job. Yeah. You got to do your job. Your job is important. You better do it well, you know, or like you said, people might die. But if you slack a little, there's someone there usually to pick up the slack in one way, shape, or form. Right. If you need to reload, they can probably cover you. You know, if you need to do something, they're still engaging targets while you're down and out. You're fixing a malfunction. If you're missing, maybe they're hitting. Right. Especially if you've got three or four guys in a room, like you said, you know, and there's two armed combatants in there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, even if you kind of screw this up, there's a pretty good chance that you guys are still going to win, you know, if you've trained to a higher level. Well, in a competition,
it's just you.
It's just you, man.
It's all you got.
You know, I mean, there's we shoot some team competitions, but we still have to make our
own individual
shots.
You're still individual shooters.
You know, so yeah, we can help each other spot or whatever, but we're still responsible for our own shooting.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no one to pick it up. It starts when that timer goes off.
Oh, yeah. And that's why I started.
You're the baddest dude in the room with no timer on, but you hear that buzzer. That stress level spike.
I have beat that problem. Because I used – and you've seen me do it in class shooting through as a student, shooting through our carbine classes. Like we'll run one of our box drills or the triangle drill or whatever. Without the timer, I'm like
– clean it.
I can clean it.
Because the only thing you have to worry about is engaging the targets.
Yeah, and I'll clean it faster than I did on the clock. Because when that clock went off, my fucking brain fell out of my asshole.
Well, here's the thing about the timer, right? The timer doesn't create stress. The timer just – keeps time, right?
I understand that now.
People create stress because of the timer, you know? And there's sometimes where it can get frustrating because you know you're under time. Like there was a competition we shot a month or so ago, a long range comp, and the big Sandy one, where it was like, dude, some of those stages seemed almost impossible to accomplish in the set time that they gave you.
Right.
And I mean, I definitely left more targets behind on that match than I would have liked to, you know, leave behind. But it was just like, dude, I mean, hell, you're barely getting in. You know, there's three positions you got to get in. You're settling into the third position. Beep, time goes off. You're like, how the hell? And so then the next stage, you don't want that to happen. So now you're pushing a little bit harder.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now you're starting to make those mistakes. You got to find that balance of speed and action before maybe you're taking too much time. And I think that's a great tactical combative skill too, right? I see sometimes in competition people, they're like, oh, yeah, but look at this accuracy. I would just smoke this dude. And you're like, yeah, but it took you 5 seconds to do that engagement. What do you think that opponent's doing
during those
five seconds? You know, in a free range environment where they're competitive and non-compliant, they can kind of do whatever they want to, man. And if it takes you 5 seconds to come up on target and engage, you're hosed, you know, from a combative environment. Competition forces you to increase your standards if you want to get any better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, any other competitive skills, Josh, that you can think of that you've kind of built on or improved that you think are applicable in a tactical environment?
Man, I don't know.
Weapons manipulation. Do you think you've gotten better in a tactical environment because of how quickly and speedily you need to manipulate weapons in a competitive environment, or do you think that having to do that in a competitive or in a tactical environment made you better doing that in a competition environment?
You kind of fall back into that safety window then again. You know, if you look at most of the matches you shoot in, you're not reholstering pistols or before you go to your rifle. You know, you're grounding a gun.
Mm.
So you're not getting a lot of that weapons manipulation. on the precision side of it, like we're talking about shooting the big Sandy matches or the NRL matches, you know, trying to work through a barricade or whatever type of multiple positions they have, I'm a hell of a lot faster than I used to be. That used to be my biggest issue. I timed out on almost every stage when I first started shooting because I was just too slow getting into positions. You know, build that speed, get in and out of positions a lot faster now, get set up a lot faster now.
So going into competition, long range stuff, especially with the barricade shooting everything, you're already a very accomplished tactical shooter. But that competitive skill set of quickly getting in and out of positions was lacking a little bit. And now you've seen a huge improvement on that, right?
Yeah,
you can totally beat me on that stuff now. Let's take that skill set. Would that have helped you at all in a tactical environment, you think?
Yeah. I mean, just look at like an ambush or something like that. You got to set up quick and pop a shot. There you go. Just that much faster at doing it.
Obviously, what you did before worked because you're here, right? So your shit works, okay? But looking at always trying to get, you know, faster, stronger, smarter and everything, take what you have learned from competition, you know, rewind back to your tactical days and say, would my competitive skills help me survive better, accomplish the mission better, whatever? You think that's true?
Yeah, but I mean, that's... Competition shooting is just adding another tool to the tool belt. That's all it really is. I mean, you're just picking up one more skill set that you know how to do better than the next guy.
Mm.
I mean, you can be the best sniper in the world, you know, and if you don't know how to land nav, who gives a shit because you're never going to find the target.
Right.
You know, so you have to have a little jack of all traits at this, and this is just another one of those traits that you're going to pick up. It's going to make you that much better.
So what are some tips that you would give tactical shooters who want to get involved in any kind of competition? You've shot so many different types of competitions and you've done well. You know, you're not just out there shooting and sucking. Because there's a lot of people I hear who are like, I'm a competition shooter. And then you like, you go shoot with them and you're like, oh, okay, I see what this is going.
You
know what I mean? But it's like anybody could call themselves a competition shooter. Just go sign up for a competition, right?
Yeah.
Now, anyone who signs up for a competition and competes is good in my book. I don't care where they place. They are good in my book because they're out there pushing it. However they do is awesome. But that being said, you know, it bears noting that you're doing well in these competitions. You're not just shooting them and sucking and going, oh, I'm a competition shooter. So having been an accomplished tactical shooter and an accomplished competitive shooter, what are some – if you were to give some words of advice or kind of some tips, hey, your gear, make sure you do this or don't worry so much about this until you get to this level or really work on these skill sets or whatever for tactical shooters, whether they be cops, military guys, active or veterans or whatever – what are some skill sets that you think people should be working on if they want to make that transition to the competitive world?
First off, you just need to go. Take whatever you got and go. I don't care if it's an old M9 from the military in an old M9 military style holster. Take it and go. Or if you got, you know, mom and dad's hunting rifle with a 4-power Weaver on it, take it. And then once you get there, watch. And learn. I mean, you can pick up so much by watching people shoot. We have tons of very accomplished shooters at all these matches. And if you just try and get squatted with them or in your free time, go watch them run through a stage and see how they do stuff. I mean, you can pick up tons. There's tons of little tidbits there to make you better.
Any specific tips or anything on gear or equipment? Or, I mean, you kind of mentioned, like, just take what you got.
Yeah.
What are some upgrades that you've made or done to your firearms or whatever that they weren't just incremental, like you were like, that makes me a little faster. Oh, that's nicer. That's more comfortable. But you were like, holy shit, that changed the game for me.
Put a brake on your rifle.
A brake on your long gun? Yeah.
One thing coming from the tactical side, you always kind of set up and shot in teams, two-man teams. Into the precision side of this, you're a one-man team now. You have to be able to spot your own. You have to be able to watch it through that recoil. Put a brake on it, makes it a hell of a lot easier.
And always remind your spotter not to sit at a 45 degree to your brake, right, Josh?
Things happen.
Man, I got a face full of brake this morning.
Aww. That's your own stupidity, I'm sure.
That's your own fault.
So then I'm looking at my dove and I see him getting in position again. So I like put my hand up onto my eye like this so I don't get hit. He's like, no, I'm just dry practicing. And he freaking saw me like getting ready to take a face full of brake. So yeah, heads up. Pay attention when your buddy does have a break on there. But all right. Anything else, man? What? Let's end with this. What would you say to the tactical shooters who are like, competition's just a game. I'm not interested in that shit. Two totally different worlds. I'm a tactical body slayer. Competition is stupid. What would you say to that?
Man, I don't even know. I don't even know how to take somebody like that. I mean, there's a reason. There's a reason why the guys at the top of the game, I don't care how tactical you think you are, top of the level special operations guys, they go train with the top competitive shooters in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think they're retarded, then
go tell them.
Continue on your ways of thinking competition's got nothing to do with accuracy or good training.
Yeah. Yep. Excellent. Thanks for coming on the show, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Mason, bring my ammo.
Someday you will get that ammo back.
It's recorded. It's recorded now. It has to happen, Mason.
Now it's live.
I think one thing that I would say is something you mentioned before, which is to watch people. You can learn a lot from watching other people run stage. Sometimes what not to do, sometimes what to do, sometimes different gear setups. You can watch people get hung up on their gear. You can watch people go super fast with their gear. You can watch how people think through their equipment, think through stages early. I've been able to do better than some people in stages because I was watching how everybody was doing, and everybody was doing it one way, and it was causing them a problem. And I just changed that way, and then I was faster. Or I've watched people do things and been like, damn, that is smooth. I'm going to do that from now on.
Or it's a good way to shake out your gear.
Mm-hmm.
We were going to go shoot that team match, and it was full battle rattle. I went out and shot the Tuesday night pistol match in full battle rattle. I looked like a retard running around. Everybody else was slick, and I'm in a full combat kit. But shook all my gear out.
Then when you show up, you know your stuff's ready.
Yep.
And it's a great way to shake it out, whether it's stuff you're going to use in a competition or even a fight. You know, one of my favorite shooters that show up to like our Wednesday night steel matches are when officers show up with their duty belts on. They don't have to come out in full uniform, but when they show up with their duty belts on, that's a dude I know or gal I know is interested in getting better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're going to run their gear 100%. As is.
Super interested in staying alive.
Yeah, I like that. So, all right, next week we're going to be talking about the different ammo manufacturers that we use, the kinds of ammo that we use, good local companies, not so good local companies, companies we've had really terrible experience with in ammo quality, other ammo that we've had really great experience with, and kind of what we use for matches, what we use for practice, and it's kind of an overall general look at some advice to our listeners, because we've learned it the hard way and wasted money on ammo.
Shoot a lot of ammo.
We shoot a lot. So we're going to talk about ammunition and why we select what we select for self-defense, for matches, for everything. Remember, you can bring us out to train with you if you want to host us. Contact us via email info@trainingaz.com. Make sure you follow us on Instagram and Facebook under The Arms Room Show, Independence Training, and, of course, Redwire Gear.
Word.
And we are part of the Heroes Media Network group. Make sure you check out Heroes Media Group and some of the other shows they have. They're creeping up on like 25 shows on the network.
Something
we're
like
still,
that,
of course, rated sure. number one. Why wouldn't
we're
we
awesome.
Be? Right? We've also been on the air, I think, for the longest running show on the network as
yes.
well. Three and a half years now or something. So.
Something to that effect.
All right, you guys, until next time, stay aware, stay safe, and train hard. You've been listening to The Arms Room.